So the community independence movement goes back, really started a decade ago in the seat of Indi in northern Victoria. There was a group of locals who went to go see their local member, Sophie Mirabella, who had been sort of parachuted in. She was a city, a city woman, but had been parachuted in to represent that seat. And they went to go tell her about the things that they wanted to change in that electorate. And she famously said to them, "The people of Indi aren't interested in politics." And that galvanised people. That one throwaway comment, I don't know if she ever, she obviously wouldn't have intended it to have long-lasting effects. Mm. But there became a movement of people in Indi who did want to talk about politics, not partisan, not red team versus blue team, but talk about shared aspirations for the area and what real local representation means. The movement kept building, and Climate 200, we weren't there at the beginning. We weren't part. We didn't start the movement, but what we saw is that the major parties have a huge advantage when it comes to elections, and one of the big advantages they have, very large investment funds. They have massive donations. They get donations from businesses, and they have 100 years or so of experience in running election campaigns. So we saw a role in helping to turbocharge these community efforts, helping them with their fundraising, and whenever they had any knowledge gaps and they asked for help, we would try to find them an expert who would give them the skills they needed to win.
How does the son of Australia's first billionaire find a passion for the environment? What's that story?
Well, there is a fair bit of my father, I guess, in the influences that for this. He integrity was incredibly important for him, and he certainly inculcated that in us at a very early age. Just to hold your integrity is the most important thing you have. But he was also cheeky. He didn't think that the establishment deserved respect just because it had always been around or just because it held power. He was really passionate that people should succeed on merit. And he also was quite an earlier promoter of women to senior positions in the business world and in senior executive positions. So I've got I was very lucky to have the influence of both my mother and father. But my mother used to take us down to the Karri forests and show us firstly just how beautiful they are, but also if you step back from the highway and see the devastation that the logging did, and seeing this amazing public asset being ripped off for private benefit and leaving a degraded landscape in its wake. Those things from an early age made me sort of hypersensitive to people rorting the system, and I guess it all comes down to integrity.
And in that same vein, what do you think the biggest misconceptions of Climate 200 are? Because it was divisive during the election.
We had a really good relationship with half the media. They might have they might print something that wasn't quite right, and we'd have a conversation, and they would make a correction, and the next article that came out would be factually correct. Whereas we were the target of News Corp, heavily target of News Corp during the campaign, and it was fascinating to see just how tightly bound News Corp and the Liberal Party are. A couple of things that the attacks did at one it. Every time there was an attack, our fundraising would jump up. We'd have a bump in donations, and it would raise the profile of the candidates. But also, it hardened the resolve of volunteers. If you're volunteering for Kate Chaney or Zoe Daniel or Monique Ryan, whatever, if you're volunteering for them and you're being told that it's a fake movement or John Howard said that volunteers for those campaigns were just groupies. Those kind of comments hardened people's resolve, made them more passionate. It was quite a polarised media on the issue, and ultimately you can see that the negative campaign didn't work.
You know, this election has been dubbed the, you know, the gender election, the, I guess, the teal or independent election. Just to recap, because that period, I don't know, but I'm sure for you it was a blur, as it was for many Australians with the media coverage and with everything that was happening. To recap, what was the what is the teal wave?
Yeah. Firstly, one of the first things I say in the book is that no one chose the teal as the name of the movement. That just emerged in the final weeks of the campaign. Some of the candidates wore, had their chosen colour was sky blue or aqua or turquoise. I don't think any of them actually were teal, burgundy and navy and all sorts of other colours in the movement, but I think political scientists sometimes use this phrase. Teal is a bit blue, meaning sort of some elements of conservative, and a bit green, valuing equality and valuing environment and climate. So maybe the label stuck because it was people were trying to place the movement somewhere between those political roles in the country. But just to tell you how the movement worked, communities who had learned about this model, and some of them had gone and got training from Cathy McGowan's Community Independence Project, some of them met with other communities and swapped notes or had seminars together, they would form committees and go out and find a candidate. And rather than the political parties can choose from members who nominate. In these cases, much wider pool. They'd go across their whole community and try to find the best possible person to stand. And that's why the caliber of the candidates that you saw is so high. And there weren't people who put their hand up saying, "I want to run." In most cases, they were somewhat reluctant candidates who had their arm twisted by friends, in some cases family, who encouraged these people, saying, "You've reached a point in your life where the next thing you can do is make a contribution to your community as our representative." So, Climate 200 was a fundraising or a crowdfunder that helped to level the playing field so that these communities could mount credible campaigns against these well-funded party machines.
There is still just this real resistance towards any sort of change. Why do you think that is, Simon?
Well, power likes to entrench itself, right? And that's one thing I really like about this movement is it's so decentralized. There's no franchise. There's no head office telling people what to do. There's no disciplinary processes with some national office. Each of these groups is fully contained within their community. And they work out in their own way that makes sense in the culture of that community how they're going to progress. Now, it was impossible to compete before recent times because the parties are so sophisticated and receive very significant public funding as well.
Do you think things are changing? Or if not, what do you hope to see come out of this major shift that we saw at the 2022 May election? Mm.
The independents, even back when there were only four of these community independents in the last parliament, with Sally Steggall, Helen Haynes, Rebecca Sharkey and Andrew Wilkie, even if it was just those, they managed to keep integrity and climate on the agenda when both major parties really didn't want to talk about them. And I think it's quite fair to say we wouldn't have a National Integrity Commission about to be legislated if Helen Haynes and for her Cathy McGowan hadn't pushed this issue and never given up. And likewise, Zali Segal's work, there's a direct line between that and the Liberal Party moving on net zero in last November and Labor legislating the emissions reduction target. So even when they don't have balance of power, these independents have got a soft power that is influencing politics. What's exciting now is that there are so many other communities that have seen, they're seeing what's happening in Canberra and they're loving it. And we're being approached, a new community every week that wants to know how they get started and who they should talk to. It's much closer, I guess, to how democracy was probably envisaged. There's no contemplation of parties in our constitution. It's just it was for a long time a necessary part of running politics, that we needed to have parties. But now it's very feasible for a community, as we've seen around the country, it's very feasible for a community to decide that they want their own representation and to run their own credible political campaign.